The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hey, it's Friday. We're on the road for our Glenn Beck comedy and stage show tour. We would love to see it tonight in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Then on Saturday, we are going to be in Pittsburgh. That's a benefit show. All the money is going to go to the police department and to the Jewish community in Pittsburgh. Then on Sunday in Cleveland, and then we're going to be a week or so out in Orlando and also Tampa. So grab your tickets now at glennbeck.com/tour. On today's podcast, we are going to talk about the funding of the caravans. You know, I know the media says, no, this is just grassroots. This is nothing, really. Because Project Veritas has come out with something pretty darn interesting about the Beto campaign actually funding some of the bus tickets, some of the airplanes, and also food. Caravan, this is against the law to use your campaign funds to do that. They're on tape, and it is really quite astonishing. Also, my answer to Don Lemon. Don, I don't believe, is a racist, but Don, you're acting like one right now. Your comments about white people being the most dangerous terrorists in America is just flat out wrong. I will show you the stats using the stats he pulled from. I'll show you how it was cherry-picked to make it look that way. It's not true. And Don, you should be ashamed of yourself for doing it. Also, Pat joins us because Stu was just too sleepy. And we'll wrap up the podcast with Pat and I talking about the economy, gas prices, and some of the crazy stories that are in the news. All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Friday, November 2nd. Glenn Beck.
So yesterday, last night, President Trump gave a speech at the White House addressing the migrant caravan that is slowly approaching the American border. The same caravan that everybody on TV says, don't worry about it. It's no problem. It's no big deal. It's not even going to make it. It's not even happening. And George Soros, he's a lovely old gentleman who we just think is marvelous, and he has nothing to do with it. Trump's speech, probably, I didn't see it. I was on stage last night, so I didn't see it, but I read about it. And here's my first impression just reading about it in the news. It must have been tremendous. Because they all said, there was nothing but hate in it and nothing new. We were duped. We shouldn't have even carried it. Okay, so it had to be great. Let me give you the big takeaway from the speech. And in my personal opinion, this was a speech given as an affirmation to the people who voted for him, just saying, yep, I got it under control. Whew, okay, good. Lot to take away from the speech. One moment that encapsulated, I think, the entire speech is probably when a reporter asked President Trump whether or not the troops will fire on migrants in the caravan. Migrants, listen.
I hope not. It's the military. I hope there won't be that. But I will tell you this. Anybody throwing stones, rocks, like they did to Mexico and the Mexican military, Mexican police, where they badly hurt police and soldiers of Mexico, we will consider that a firearm, because there's not much difference when you get hit in the face with a rock, which, as you know, it was very violent a few days ago, very, very violent. That break-in, it was a break-in of a country. They broke into Mexico. And you look at what's happening in Guatemala, just to mention Guatemala, along with El Salvador and Honduras. It's disgraceful that those countries aren't able to stop this, because they should be able to stop it before it starts. And the United States pays them a fortune. And we're looking at not doing that anymore, because why should we be doing that when they do nothing for us?
Wow, is that a John Wayne, Clint Eastwood moment? The first time I've ever heard him self-edit. Did you notice that? He self-edited on the spot. I've never seen him do this. He said, you know, getting hit with a rock in the face is, well, you know, what? The same as getting hit with a bullet in the face? He recognized, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Unbelievable. This is a message for the people in Honduras, the people in Guatemala, the people in Mexico. It is also a message for anybody who is funding all of this, perhaps Venezuela. There are reports, we have not verified them, but there are reports that leftists here in America are also helping the funding now on the buses, et cetera, et cetera. So this is our president. And if you don't like it, I don't know what to say, because there's a lot of people who have been waiting for a president to say, you know what, America is not of, you know, is not cheap and worthless. The Statue of Liberty in the poem by Emma Lazarus said, I hold my lamp beside the golden door. It's a golden door. There is a door, and it's a special door. I hate to sound like, oh my gosh, Emma Lazarus might have been Donald Trump. It's a big, beautiful door. It's a special, it's a golden door. My gosh, he may be older than we think. We have a system of laws, and the president is right. When they broke in to Mexico, they tore down the gates. They were not coming in peacefully, let's say that. America has a unique spirit and a unique place, and it's worth defending. The president, of course, faces a barrage of hate every day. And sometimes he deserves it, quite honestly. Sometimes he says things, like if he would have finished that sentence, it would be like, well, that's your fault. But most times, it seems, he does not. They cannot take him. As Jon Stewart said, they are just, it's their ego. It's their ego. They can't believe they can't destroy this guy. Anybody who says, you know, let me put it this way. I wrote about this in the book. I look at people when they talk about Donald Trump, I look at them the same way I would look at somebody who says, McDonald's is horrible. Everything at McDonald's is horrible. Really? What about their French fries? If they don't say, okay, their French fries are freaking fantastic, probably not the best health for you, but they're fantastic, but the rest of the stuff is horrible. If people wouldn't say, oh, okay, I give you the French fries, but the milkshake's not even milk. I get it. You are not an honest broker of information. If you can't say, okay, this president has done some things that are horrible, some things that are good. If you can't say that as a member of the press, you have zero credibility. Zero. And don't talk to me about hero worship or selling out or anything like that. Mr. I've got a thrill and a chill running up my leg. The minute Barack Obama was on the scene, everyone had a crush on the cool guy. The media and academia have gone insane. But you know what? The media and academia went insane in the other direction for Barack Obama. Now this is toxic nonsense. Toxic nonsense. We're living in historic times. We really are. And it's exciting to live in these times. If we don't kill each other, this is a time where we all get to figure out who we really are, what we really believe in, how great we actually can be. Historic times are often turbulent times. The greatest generation, those people were fantastic. That was in turbulent times.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right, we got Robin in Virginia.
Hi, Robin.
Hi,
were you there last
you
night? I was
yes,
great.
I was there last night.
Yeah.
It was great. It was absolutely wonderful. I laughed hysterically. And I was the one you handed the bucket of pizza to when you walked out.
Well, see, you know, it's not that I don't keep giving. It's, you know, I fed
exactly.
the audience last night. So,
wow.
That's great.
Yeah, you fed everybody.
Yeah. Robin, thank you so much for coming.
Okay,
I'm glad
well,
you were there.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
We got Karen in Virginia. Karen, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Karen.
Hello. Hi, Glenn.
Hi.
So, first of all, I got to tell you that I watch you on The Blaze all the time. And
so
my husband will come in and see you, or he'll come in and he'll leave. He'll come back in. He'll go back out. He'll come back in. He goes, does Glenn know that he looks like Colonel Sanders?
Okay, all right, okay. This is not helpful. This is just not helpful. Karen, thank you for coming last night. In Hershey, Pennsylvania, tonight, tomorrow in Pittsburgh, and Sunday, Cleveland. GlennBeck.com/tour.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
So, in my book, I talk about Don Lemon. And I talk about how Don Lemon said that, no doubt about it, Donald Trump is a racist. And I tried to explain to him what he was feeling and how wrong he was, trying to explain to Don Lemon, no, I can see how you see it that way, but here's actually what you're misinterpreting. Don Lemon and no one in the media is actually interested in hearing a different opinion. They are convinced they're right, and anyone else is either a liar or part of the problem or just been zombified for Donald Trump. None of those things are true. Some people have been zombified. Most people have not. The people who are true zombies are the ones that can't listen to their rhetoric and notice something's not quite right. Don Lemon got a lot of heat this week for something that he said. I mean, it is the most contradictory statement I've ever heard anyone make in history. Here's what he said.
So we have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right, to the right. And
okay,
we have to start doing something about them. There.
Okay. All right. We have to stop demonizing people and realize that the biggest terror threat is white men. Wow. One of the craziest and most racist thing I have ever heard. But screw the white people. So the backlash began to pile up. And Don Lemon, you would think in a reasonable world, would go, okay, I wasn't thinking or whatever. But that's not what he did. Now, the media doesn't understand why Donald Trump says you're fake news and you're an enemy of the people. They don't understand it. Well, let me explain it. With things like this, it shows you are an enemy to the people, to a large number of people in America, because you are wrong. And then when you're caught in that, you don't apologize. You actually double down. Here's the next day, Don Lemon.
Tonight, I also want to talk about some uncomfortable truth. The truth about who really carries out domestic terror attacks in this country. Earlier this week, I made some comments about that in a conversation with Chris. I said that the biggest terror threat in this country comes from radicals on the far right, primarily white men. That angered some people. But let's put emotion aside and look at the cold, hard facts. The evidence is overwhelming. A recent report from the Government Accountability Office shows that. Even though more people died in attacks connected to Islamic extremists, the vast majority of deadly attacks in this country from 2001 to 2016 were carried out by far-right violent extremists.
Okay, this is fantastic. This is fantastic. How do you argue that? It's actually quite easy because those overwhelming cold hard facts are not flawed. They are flawed the way you are presenting them, because you're not presenting the entire picture. Cory Booker basically said the same thing, and the media is treating them as absolutely right. Well, we're not going to do that. If they were right, I would say, I'm sorry, America, I got to tell you the truth. He's right. But he is not right. They're quoting from the Government Accountability Office report on countering violent extremism. So Lemon alluded to cold, hard facts, but he didn't give any context. Context matters. So we'll do it because the media won't. During his sorry, but not really sorry, mea culpa refusal, Lemon quoted GAO report finding that from September 12, 2001 until the end of 2016, there have been 80, I'm giving you the actual facts, he just alluded to them, there have been 85 extremist attacks, and 73% of those documented attacks were committed by right-wing people. Case closed, right? 73%? Are you kidding me? 85 attacks, and 73% are documented right-wingers. Well, that's overwhelming. Those are the facts. No, they're not. Because you have to actually look at what they're talking about. If you look at the listed attacks, you'll see a few things that are kind of peculiar. Now, it's very obvious from Lemon's rant that he was talking about domestic terror, right? They are, the white man is the most responsible for domestic terror. But the GAO report lists cases that don't have anything to do with domestic terrorism. The GAO counted every single case where a fatality occurred and the attacker had an affiliation with right-wing or white supremacist affiliation. Well, here's what that list includes. That list includes prison murders. Again, does anybody have a doubt that there's right-wing white nationalists in prison? When they kill each other, that's on the list. That's murder, gang violence, where race, religion, or sexual orientation were not the motive. One case out of the 84 was a member of a white supremacist street gang that killed his own father. That's murder. That's not terror. That's murder. And it's a white supremacist. He's in a white supremacist gang. He killed his dad. That's murder, not terror. So the report that Cory Booker, by the way, it's about to get much better. The report that Cory Booker and Don Lemon are using to show that white men are the most dangerous terror threat includes prison and gang crime, where many times race or bigotry wasn't even the motive. So does that say they're skewing this? They're not really telling you the truth? Absolutely. If your case is built around this report and you try to label an entire race of people as dangerous terrorists, that's not just insanely dishonest, that is racist, Don. You are saying that white men, there were 85 incidents that you say are domestic terror. Okay, now here's where it really gets interesting. Don does point out that there were more fatalities from Islamic extremists versus right-wing extremists. Right-wingers killed 106 people, as documented in the GAO. Right-wingers killed 106. Jihadis killed 119. Now, I also found an even more interesting fact here. The GAO report did not include any attack unless it included a fatality. Now, how many, and remember, I don't ever ask a question that I don't know the answer to, how many multiple attacks have happened from Islamic extremists that don't show up because they didn't kill anyone or they were thwarted by the FBI? Not in this report. Now, if you're going to call all white people terrorists, you might want to have the information to back it up, more than a flawed study that includes prison and gang violence. So we went to the Department of Homeland Security. From 2001 to 2013, there were 53 Islamic terrorist attacks here in America that were foiled by law enforcement. From 2014 to 2016, with ISIS alone, there were 101 foiled attacks. So, in the span of the GAO study that Don Lemon is quoting from, there were 154 foiled attacks from Islamic extremists. That's a lot more than the entire 84, if you're keeping track at home, or 85. So you combine that, you combine the right-wing attacks and the Islamic terrorist attacks, including the prison and gang violence, and there are still only 85 incidences? Really? Because the jihadis tried to kill us on our own soil 154 times. So which one is more dangerous? And if I said, you know, they tried to kill us 154 times, clearly all Muslim men are the problem here. Muslim men are the biggest danger in America for terrorism today. Don, do you think I could get away with that? Or do you think you and your network would deem me a racist? Remember, I don't ask any questions that I don't already know the answer to. Unlike Booker and Lemon, I want you to know I am not stating the facts of the 154 to demonize, because I am not saying Muslim men are our biggest terror threat. I will say Islamists, and I don't care what race they are, Islamists are our biggest terror threat. That could be a woman, that could be a man, that could be a white guy, it could be an Arab guy, we don't know. But Islamists are our biggest terror threat. Not all Muslim, not all Arab men. How dare you, Don Lemon, become the racist that you have always said we should never become or be? How dare you become Mr. Whitey 1956? But even more irresponsible than Don Lemon is CNN. CNN, this is why the president says you're an enemy of the people. What do you call an organization that backs up the use of a twisted, flawed study or report on that study and says that, what is it, 40% of the country? White men, 30% of the country is white men, that 30% of the country needs to be dealt with. Well, who doesn't think that's racist? I'm not labeling all Muslims as terrorists, because that would be irresponsible and flat out wrong. But more irresponsible is going on national cable TV on a supposed news network and then tailoring facts that you absolutely had to cherry pick and ignore, while at the same time demonizing an entire race of people, while at the same time saying we shouldn't demonize people. False narratives, propaganda. They are only successful when questioning stops and you're not doing your own homework. This is why the progressive and now postmodern movement is not teaching our children how to think. They're teaching our children what to think. It's why you are shouted down and you are put behind a digital ghetto wall where you can say whatever you want, ask any question you want, but no one will hear you because of the algorithms. They are trying to teach America as they taught Megyn Kelly. Don't you dare ask a single question, because once you cannot ask a question, flawed thinking, flawed facts, and I'm sorry, Don Lemon, but the shoe fits you today. Racists like Don Lemon, get away with it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Back to Beto here and the tape that Project Veritas has come out with. And what they have are two staffers that are field staffers. One is a field manager and the other one is a field coordinator for Beto here in Texas. And the media is not paying attention to this at all. They should. These guys are admitting to federal crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about taking money from the campaign and buying bus tickets, buying, I think they did say, airline tickets, and food and blankets, and helping people from Honduras get to the United States.
And there's also another field manager, Andrea Reyes, a field manager for the Beto campaign. And she's talking about how she's got proof that she shared this with the campaign manager. Here's what she said.
I don't really know for you.
They said it was fine.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to go there. I told you about it. I have the messages to prove it. So.
Yeah. So you told, like, Jody, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I told Jody, and I told
Yes, Jody, the campaign manager.
Okay. I know that we
can you translate here? Cause,
yeah. She says,
because
yeah,
I can't understand it.
The thing is, as long as we're not advertising it, I mean, I don't really know. They said it was fine. So, and then she continues talking about Jody, the campaign manager. I mean, I don't know, okay? I told you about it. I have the text messages to prove it. So what she's saying is,
wow,
she informed Jody, the campaign manager for Beto, that they were sending these funds to, I guess, the Honduran caravan people. And they were, and she told the campaign manager about it, and they were fine with it. And she has the text messages to prove it.
I just don't understand how this guy is even close. He is a democratic mm-hmm. socialist. I mean, he is as left as they come, out of line with Texas. He is a postmodernist kind of guy, out of line with Texas. Now, taking campaign funds, and even if they were low staffers, this has been out since yesterday. There's been no move to get rid of these staffers, no move of him having to come out and say, oh, we would never do that. And, we, you know, these guys did it. They did it on their own. We fired them because we won't take that. None of that. How is Texas voting for this guy? I don't think he's going to win, but I don't even understand how he has 20%.
I don't either. She, you know, the Project Veritas person posing as a journalist says, so you actually told, he asks her point blank, you actually told Jody? Yeah, I told Jody and I told my director. Well, okay, that's a problem. And
that's a crime.
Yeah, it's a crime.
It's a federal crime.
Yeah.
You know, Project Veritas, and I remember I talked to James, what's his last
O'Keefe.
Name? James O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked to James when he was first starting out, and I thought he was a really nice guy. And he had the right intent. And, you know, he may still, and I'm not throwing him under the bus or anything, but I was concerned about how sloppy they were at times, and that he would sometimes, I felt, creatively edit things. And for instance, when the New York Times caught the O'Keefe reporter, do you remember that one where they were trying to get inside of into the New York Times, and the New York Times reporter figured it out
mm-hmm.
And just really embarrassed that person? It was just sloppy, and he shouldn't have done that. Now, I think he's cleaned that up and he's gotten smarter because the stuff that he's coming out with now is really, really important, really important. And if he is as buttoned up as I think he is right now, this is stuff we have to pay attention to. And we got to bring it to our friends who are Democrats on the other side of the street, not the other side of the aisle, because the aisle implies a politician. They're not going to care. Other side of the street, the people who are in your neighborhood that may not have woken up, and don't take this stuff to them and say anything other than, have you seen this? What do you think of this? Well, James O'Keefe, well, what do you know about him? Because I agree. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't know. But, you know, I could have a very good conversation with people saying, yeah, I know. He's done some things that I don't think are great. But he's also exposed some things, and he's been right on the money. What do you think about this? I mean, do you, Rowan Farrow, do you take Rowan Farrow as a credible source? Well, of course I do. Okay. Well, he's been wrong on a couple of things there. I mean, Kavanaugh, he was wrong on. So, you know, people can be wrong. The question is, how do you excuse this? Because there's no way to take what they said out of context unless what they said right before was, okay, I mean, if I were doing this stuff and, you know, I wanted us to look bad, what I would say is roll tape.
Right. Which didn't, you know what happen. I mean? Yeah.
Right. And for them to have these guys on tape saying this and then Beto not coming out and saying immediately, okay, guys, I looked into this. Those guys are wrong. And that is illegal. And we'll pay the fine or whatever, but I've put out this paper and we're not doing that. We are not putting money toward the Hondurans. We are not. We did. Apparently, these people took some of those funds, but I've corrected that. We will never do that. If they're not doing that, how do you trust them with anything? And I would say exactly the same thing if a Republican were doing it, and those who listen to me know I would.
And can you imagine if this were Ted Cruz we were talking about? Would this be this would be on every broadcast. This would lead every story. This would lead every newscast. This would be on New York Times, be in the Washington Post. It'd be everywhere, and they'd be demanding his head. They'd be demanding.
Okay, so let's reverse this. If staffers were caught on tape by Media Matters, mm-hmm. okay? And they were caught on tape, and they were saying, yeah, well, don't say this. We don't want people to know, but we've taken some of Ted's campaign cash, and we're actually paying patriots to come down and live on the border and have their guns and make sure these Hondurans are not coming across. Do you think every single operation in America would be on those tapes? And even if they said Media Matters, they have got a, and none of them would, but Media Matters has an axe to grind. Media Matters is not a credible source, but here's the person saying it. We reached out to the campaign to get an answer. That's the very least that should be done.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to do it. Mm-hmm. They're never going to do it. And Pat, don't you think this is why people feel that Donald Trump is justified in some way to say the press is an enemy of the
yes.
people?
Yes. It's part of the reason he got elected, and it's part of the reason they feel justified when he says those kinds of things. And
right.
And when he says it now, you know, I think a couple of years ago, I might have been irritated by it. Now I tend to think, well, yeah, that's how they act. They act like an enemy of the people.
I'm still bothered by it because it's not helpful.
It isn't helpful. Right.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's not going to change anyone's heart. You know, it's not going to get anybody on the left to go, now, wait a minute, does he have a point? Because it's too big of a broad brush. Yeah. It's like Don Lemon. Don Lemon making that statement. He could have said, look, you know, white men and people who are in these white extremists, they are a real problem that we should address.
And he didn't qualify it like that at all.
He didn't qualify.
Yeah.
He said, white males are the biggest terror threat.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to listen to him? He didn't, but he could have a valid point. And no one on the other side will listen to it because that's the approach. We can't approach it like that because we're the ones that have to change people's hearts. The other side, the extreme left, they'll just kill people. If you don't agree, they'll either shame you and run you out of society or kill you. And those are their words. And I'm not talking about Democrats. I'm talking about the extreme left. That's what they do. We have to change people's hearts because I don't want to round anybody up and I don't want to kill anybody. So we've got to change people's hearts. And we have to start doing that now before this gets even worse.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
So Pat is sitting in for Stu, and I don't know why you have to pick it up where he left off. I just don't. I don't think it's kind.
I don't think it's obvious truisms that must be revealed here, and I just want people to understand when they come into the auditorium in Hershey, not to be flabbergasted to the point where they flee the stadium. I don't want that to happen.
Okay, shut up. So I got some questions from the audience last night, and I didn't have a chance to address them. So let me address some of them. Who will be the Democratic candidate for 2020?
It's a good question.
I think it's too early to say. I don't think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren.
I got some possibilities.
Who?
One of them is Beto.
I think that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
I think Beto is going to be on that stage.
He's a good mix.
He might actually be the guy.
He's a good mix between a politician and a rock star. And, so you don't have to go to let's say, Tom Hanks, who really, nobody knows anything about his policies, where he stands on issues, how he would run. But this guy has all of this momentum behind him now. And he's a politician.
Except he's not going to win.
He's not going to win. No, he's not. And
you did say that you would eat your underwear if
he
wins. Beto
wins. Yes.
So we're doing live coverage on the Blaze TV on Tuesday night. It's going to be quite the coverage.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
Oh, my gosh. We're bringing in a lot of friends, and we got a lot of voices, a lot of faces you recognize, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Our coverage will begin at 6 p.m. on Tuesday. And so, I'm bringing a chef in to prepare underwear in many different, there'll be some, Asian Pacific underpants that you can try.
So we've got a lot of different underwear recipes. Lots of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's classically trained, too, so he can just make some French sauce.
I don't even know what you marinate underpants in before you, grill them?
Well, that's a barbecue. That's when we're going to be barbecuing some underpants for you. But,
okay, all right.
We if you'd like, we could have him make Fruit de Loom
sauce.
I can't say it now. I can't say duck au l'orange, fruit de loom au l'orange. I was like, I can't say it without the duck in it. I don't know why. Okay, so I think you're right. I think it's going to be Beto. Another question. What do you think will happen when the Honduras caravan reaches the U.S. border? My hope is that it doesn't reach the U.S. mm-hmm. border. If it does, I think we are going to see the coverage on CNN and MSNBC and the BBC and everything else, you will mm-hmm. see the coverage that you see on the Israeli border with the Palestinians. You will see a very skewed look. They are going to show all of the things that are bad for the United States and good light for the Hondurans. And this mm-hmm. will begin our forever border struggle like Israel has. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree 100%. It's going to be ugly. If they make it to the border, the press is going to be hoping for incidents, for something to go wrong.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
You've got a real. You have a real recipe for disaster. You talk about recipes for underpants. There's a recipe for disaster. I don't even want to think about it because it could get ugly.
And here's the thing: you need to be saying to your friends right now, "What is going to happen? I mean, they're moving troops there. Would you ever bring your children to that? Would you just ask this question of your liberal friends? I mean, you know, I've got compassion for those guys, and I can see that. But would you ever bring your children to that? How dangerous is that?
Absolutely not.
You don't do that. Get them to acknowledge now, because if it happens, there are going to be children involved, and that's who the media will focus on. And you have to right now get your friends to recognize that that is crazy and irresponsible to bring any child to this. You don't do it.
And that's something we don't talk about enough. There's absolutely no responsibility, no accountability on the part of the parents involved here.
No.
And some of them are unaccompanied, supposedly. I mean, I see scant few children to begin with. But the ones who were there, many of them are unaccompanied. So parents said, okay, go with these people. I understand that conditions are probably not ideal in Honduras. But couldn't it be a heck of a lot worse when you turn them over to 7,000 people you don't know? And then just say, good luck on the 2,600-mile walk to the border. And then when you get there, if the military's there, keep your head down. I don't even understand that. I don't get it.
No, neither do I. Glenn, what would you tell the Republican Party they should do before the midterm to rally voters, conservatives, independents, and even uninformed Democrats? I don't know. Tell them about the border. Tell them about the $42 trillion plan of the Democratic Socialist. Show the radicals in the Democratic Party and how they are not like them. And show them the debt that we have. Show them the truth about everything that is going on and say, which you got to choose. But it's not going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen. People are already set in their ways. And this, do you think this is hyperbole, Pat, to say, because I've always hated this. This election is the most important in your lifetime. The next few elections actually are, and not in our lifetime, but in the lifetime of the Republic and the Western way of life. These next few elections could decide whether the West survives or not.
Yes, because they're going to determine whether we turn to socialism or not.
And not the kind of socialism. And this is the thing I so want you to understand and share with your friends. There is a difference between a Democrat who wants a bigger welfare state. Canada is not a socialist state. They have socialist medicine. Mm-hmm. They have socialized medicine. They do not it's not a socialist state. It is a capitalist state. So there are those who say, I just want more, government programs. They're not socialists. They just disagree with us on where, where the limit is on government. That's not a socialist. That's certainly not a communist. A socialist, a democratic socialist, go to their own website. Don't take this from me. Listen to Ocasio-Cortez. They do not want capitalism as part of this country. They think capitalism is a failure and it's time for it to come to an end. That's not the Netherlands. You don't build IKEA in a socialist country. That's a capitalist market.
Same with Norway with Nokia and Finland with their industries and Sweden. Those are all really, they still all are involved in the free market in some way. So every country that's pointed out as successful socialist, they're really not. The socialist countries you can point out are Cuba, Venezuela. China even has a hybrid now of communism and capitalism. That's why they've lifted 400 million people out of poverty. I mean, capitalism has saved billions of people on this planet.
So in the show that we have, I show the stats of what the Western world has done in the last 20 years. And Pat, I read these stats one by one and they go up on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, probably 70% of them, 50 to 70%, got the audience gasping.
Really?
They were like,
wow.
Oh my gosh. You could hear the audience saying, how do I not know this? How is this true? This can't be true. Is this true? How do we not know this? The stats of what the West and particular America has done. Staggering.
I believe it.
But nobody's willing to talk about it. It's going to be up to each of us as individuals. By the way, all of the stats are in the book, Addicted to Outrage. And it shows you, because there's a section, we have to decide, are we good or bad? Is the Western way of life worth saving? Well, you need to know. Here are the bad things. Here are the good things.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.